They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax. Joining us today are David Kahn and Beanie Adolph, all the way from Texas. And I want to thank you both very much for making this show possible. David, I know you've been flying all over the country. You're exhausted. Your plane was late, so I really appreciate you doing this. Beanie, I want to talk about your website as well, and I want to talk about all the stuff that's been going on in Texas, because I know in Texas you have been you've been doing a lot of lobbying and legislative work, and I know, David, you've been very active in this. So thank you both for joining me.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Indeed. Thanks.
All right, I need you to both speak up a little bit.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, David. It's been a long time. So what have you been up to? What's going on? I know you've been up to Austin, or down to Austin. I'm not sure how the geography works.
Everything's uphill from Houston. We're basically a swamp by the coast. But it has our charms, and if you love birds, come down to Texas. It's a great place to be. Where we are, Shu, right now is we've just come to the end of the Texas legislative session. And the Texas legislature, for better or for worse, meets once every 2 years, and it meets for 6 months unless there's a special session. Everything gets packed into a very short period of time, and then we all go back and try to figure out what we did and live with what we did, and 18 months from now it starts all over again. At this point in the session, all bills either have been passed already, or they're not going to get passed. However, the governor still has a couple weeks left to decide whether or not to sign bills. Just like in the federal system, after the legislature enacts the bills, the governor has the right to sign or veto them. And at this point, the major bills that we're concerned with, the governor hasn't acted on. But we have some sense of what's going on. Briefly, what has happened, where most of our attention has been, is on what's called an omnibus bill, in which the legislature made changes to multiple parts of the property code, mostly affecting subdivisions. A very small part of this legislation affects condominiums. And I know we want to talk about that some today, but it's worth also mentioning that we had, in addition to this bill, there were several other significant bills that were proposed in this session, some of which we very much wanted, and two come to mind, and maybe Beanie, you'll remind me if I've left any out, but One of our good friends, Mary Lou Durham, persuaded Representative Bohack to propose a bill that would do something that is just common sense. It would require the members of the board of a homeowner association actually to read their governing documents.
What a novel idea.
What a novel idea. We as owners at least owners in subdivisions, are presumed to have read the deed restrictions, and that's how they can enforce them against us. The association, the owner cannot say, I didn't know there was a rule. The law presumes that we know every rule that's written down. So the law presumes that the board knows every rule that's written down. Why don't we at least require them to read the rules so that they can form some opinions about whether those rules are sensible or not? The other thing that her bill would have done was to clarify that members of the board have certain fundamental responsibilities to owners. Now, owing to some quirks in Texas law, it is clear that those responsibilities, which are some fiduciary duties, are in fact required of new condominiums, those built within the last several decades. But that language has never been officially adopted for all subdivisions and the older condos. There is a statute that provides a weaker version of that fiduciary duty requirement, but Durham's bill would have, Bohack's bill, would have made sure that all directors have basic responsibilities to treat owners fairly, such as by disclosing information that owners need to know, and not giving themselves contracts and things like that. And lest anyone doubt that those are still of concern, I have a case right now where the condominium association did not obtain sufficient insurance and concealed that fact from the owners for more than a year and a half after the buildings burned down. So Mary Lou's bill would have been very important just in terms of good government. You should at least read your own governing documents.
Is there any way of making sure that they do? You know, having a law that says you need to know what you're doing and actually making sure that people know what they're doing is two entirely different things.
Well, there is no such law right now. Mary Lou's bill would have required them to read it and then sign a form saying, I have read the documents.
Oh, so they would say, would this be before they were actually elected to the board?
After elected, but before their first vote.
Okay.
The second important bill or set of bills would have been encouraged by, you know, proposed by another person who's been a regular guest on your show, Bill Davis, a good friend of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And these bills would have tried to end monopolistic or oligopolistic practices in a small number of subdivisions containing, well, I don't know if it's a small number. I've been exposed to it in a small number. What I would say is these are the ones who were trying to grab even more money from owners. And they do it by limiting the choice of fuel that the owner can use, and by tying the owner to the particular type of fuel. We believe that the associations are driving up the price that the owners have to pay, and that we basically favor competition, in some sense the American way, to keep the price of fuel fair. And unfortunately, that bill did not pass, or those bills did not pass, and so we'll be back
in 2 years,
some version of that in the next session.
So doesn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought that Texas had deregulated gas or all of that stuff so you could buy it from whoever you wanted to buy it from. And then the association was the one who was imposing these limits, right?
That's correct.
So this would mean that the association would not have a say. Once the state law says you can buy your whatever fuel you want from whoever you want to, is that correct?
I think that was the general thrust of what these bills were trying to accomplish, the idea that the homeowner could choose. The state would, this wasn't going to affect the state's ability to regulate. It was simply to say that whatever the state does, the homeowner then gets to choose among those otherwise regulated options.
Right.
I think the options are all somewhat regulated by the Public Utility Commission, but the state does not tell owners what fuel to buy. It's the associations, and it's not all associations. It's some associations sign contracts with providers of fuel, and it's those must-purchase contracts that the bills were trying to prevent. And so, basically, I just wanted to say that although we have had some success with the omnibus bill, we did not have success with these other two bills this year. And so we'll be developing strategies on those issues for coming years.
I want to go back to, before we move on, I want to go back to the fact that boards are now required to read the governing documents, and you said they need to know the rules. There's a difference between a rule, which is something the board comes up with, and a governing document, which is part of the association, part of the corporate paperwork.
That's right. There is an important distinction between the two, but the bill that I'm talking about would have required the board members to read their declaration or their CCRs,
okay,
whichever they have, plus their articles of incorporation and their bylaws and any rules that they have adopted.
Okay, so the whole thing, they need to know. They need to know. Okay.
So then, Beanie, I'm not sure if there were any other bills you felt we ought to mention at this point from this session.
The other bill was the one about the Texas Family Council that we hoped to get through.
That is correct, and it was such a disappointment that I forgot about that one. You want to just briefly mention what we were trying to get there, Beanie?
Let's see. That was HB 1335. That was an effort to cap attorney fees at $500 filed by Representative Gutierrez at the request of the Texas Family Council.
And as I think all of your listeners will know, one of the most significant issues that owners face is that they can get into a situation where a very small dispute rapidly escalates to cost a lot of money because attorneys for the association too readily jump into the fray and use their attorney fees as leverage to force a concession by the owners. So that whether the owner is or is not correct in their interpretation, so, you know, perhaps an owner says, well, I ought to be able to have this kind of bush in my front yard, and the association says, no, you can't have it, and we're suing you, and the attorney fees, you know, rapidly escalate. That's one way that the association maintained power, and in another way, the associations escalate attorney fees if an assessment is allegedly owed. And we were trying to start small. We were trying to start by limiting the fees that the association could charge for uncontested resolutions of assessments, so that if a person was sued, well, I guess we were originally trying for something more than that, but we offered a compromise that was that if a person was sued and agreed not to contest the amount disputed, that the attorney fees would be capped at $500, and even $1,000 we ended up offering in negotiations, and we never got that.
So that's still out there.
That's out there, and we have a case. It's not one of my cases, but legal aid in Austin is representing a woman who had to travel out of the state to help take care of her father, who was ill at the time. And when she came back a few weeks later, she went through her mail and found that there was a bill for $200 in assessments. She immediately, literally that day, paid $100 of it and then went to double check on the amount, and then half a week later paid the other $100, and to make a very long story short, the association did not accept some of that payment and has already collected nearly $2,000 from her and is asking for yet another $1,000. So the fees on a bill that she promptly paid have escalated to several $1,000s, and we think that's obscene.
You know, Maryland passed a law capping attorney fees a few years ago.
I did not know that.
Evan actually went out to Maryland and testified for the bill, and it did pass. So there is a precedent out there.
And what does the Maryland law provide?
I'm not 100% sure at this point because it is a couple of years old, but it does cap attorney fees. They cannot go beyond a certain limit on what they charge.
So what one of the things that's interesting is we also have a cap on attorney fees that was passed several years ago in Texas for non-judicial foreclosures. The cap was at $2,500, if I recall. But then we eventually succeeded in eliminating non-judicial foreclosures, which was a good thing.
Yeah.
However, we don't have a cap on the replacement process, which gives the owners the right to go to court. So one of the concerns that we have learned to, unfortunately, fear is that if we solve one problem, another problem may appear in its place.
So you're going to
look at that Maryland law for next time and see if we can use it to get some support for what we'd like.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're going to go after this again, check with Maryland, check with Evan McKenzie, because he has his paperwork and all of that, and I think it passed the way it was written. MHA worked for that, which I thought was a very, very good thing, because as you said, attorney fees sort of spiral out of control. I have two questions for you, David. Number one, do you feel that there is a conflict of interest because it's the HOA attorney who advises the board, and when that advice leads them into litigation, it's also the HOA attorney who benefits?
Well, no, I don't think that's a conflict of interest. That's unfortunately the common result of what happens when lawyers work for anybody, which is if I give somebody the advice to bring a lawsuit and they're paying, that then benefits me and my family. I think that the bigger problem is that we don't have an alternative way of resolving these disputes where the owner can get a fair review of their situation. Sometimes the problem is that the owner doesn't actually owe the money, but in order to contest the demand by the association, the owner has to spend immense amounts of money and time and emotional energy, and that's true whether it's a $100 fine because the association says you shouldn't have a particular plant in your front yard, or whether it's a $200 demand for an assessment. For the owner to fight back requires time, money, and emotional energy, whereas the association can readily engage a lawyer, and because of the one-sided structure of lawsuits, at least in Texas, the association has very little risk if they sue the owner, and the owner, if they lose in court, has a huge risk. You may remember Texas has this very bad provision where if the association sues you and wins, the law entitles them to their attorney fees. If the association sues an owner and loses, the owner does not have the right to attorney fees.
That needs to be balanced out, I think. In Virginia, it's the prevailing party that is entitled to costs and fees. And I guess I always have the old Belhaven case in mind. That was a Virginia case when I asked the question, because in that case, the homeowners wanted to replace the roof that was leaking. It was an older house, and there was a requirement, a guideline that said that they had to replace it with the same roof shingles. And the same roof shingles have not been made for hundreds of years. I mean, they just don't exist. So they go, they go through the whole rigmarole of, Mother, may I please replace and fix my roof? and these are the shingles that I would like to use. And, of course, they said, no, we have a requirement. You have to replace them with the identical shingles. Well, they don't exist. Well, that's too bad. So for a long time, this roof leaked and the house, you know, got moldy and it had all kinds of problems. But, of course, it was the attorney who said, stick to your guns, because if you give them, you know, they have to abide by the rules. You have rules for a reason, and don't give in. Well, turns out that the homeowner happened to be an attorney who knew, and she went after them. And they've spent years in court. And the advice that they got from their attorney was so horrendous. The association lost and lost and lost and lost. And they kept turning around and suing and countersuing and appealing. And they just kept losing until the association went bankrupt.
Wow.
And but the good thing is, and here's the silver lining to all of this, is that once the association went bankrupt, these homeowners went to their neighbors and said, let's dissolve the HOA. Well, that was too difficult. So what they did was they rewrote the governing documents and they totally gutted it. So the association has absolutely zero powers. They can't tell you whether or not you can plant rose bushes. You know, there are no covenant, you know, all of that's gone. There's no architectural control committee, nothing. And the net result of that is that people started working together and they started fixing their homes. And they started doing all the things that they weren't allowed to do before. And property values went up. And and everybody came together and acted like a community as opposed to being at war.
I mean, that is a wonderful story. And my only cynical footnote is, lucky homeowner, lucky, you know, to have subjected themselves to this, normal homeowners would have to spend a great deal of money to find a lawyer who will give them the advice as to how to negotiate our court system for what is a very simple proposition, and that is widely recognized every state in the country, the impossibility of performance of a contract term means that the contract term cannot be enforced.
That was just one of the issues. There were several issues. Mm-hmm. That was just one of them, and that I think catapulted a lot of other ones. It sort of set up this adversarial situation in the development.
But the fundamental point is that we really shouldn't be having an expensive judicial process to deal with these relatively minor disputes. There ought to be a much simpler way that the disputes, if they're remotely legitimate, could be resolved. I mean, I'm not saying every dispute in a subdivision is wrong. Sometimes there are people who allow their houses to become crack houses or sufficiently dilapidated that it's dangerous if children play in them. It's at least possible to imagine such circumstances, and they come up. But the techniques to deal with that kind of situation are not appropriately transformed to deal with to let the attorney fees become the leverage for the association to essentially demand what they want. That's a longer term issue for us. We didn't feel this year that we had enough political leverage in the legislature to go after the full set of issues. We have quite a number of issues here in Texas. Another one is that if I, as an owner, want to sue to force my association to follow its own documents, under certain circumstances, the association can refuse to defend and force me to join all of my neighbors. And as crazy as that sounds, that has happened in several cases where an owner, for example, wants to force the association to have meaningful elections. As you know, sometimes associations, the boards, stay in power for a very long time by avoiding having meaningful elections. And so we have an ongoing case right now where there's an owner who wants to force a meaningful election, and the association has said, not unless you join as a defendant all of your neighbors. And that costs thousands extra and, of course, is very divisive within the community. So we had a number of issues that were that we'd like to eventually get to, but we didn't feel this year that we were in a position to advocate for them. We tried to focus on the issues, among the issues we tried to focus on were the three that we mentioned before, Mary Lou Durham's bill on requiring board members to read their own documents, Bill Davis's bill on trying to give owners choice in buying fuels, and the Family Council's bill on capping attorney fees. And then we got surprised, frankly, to see that TCAA, which is one of the large organizations of attorneys and property managers, had proposed an omnibus bill which covered approximately 20 different issues of concern to TCAA. And before we get into that, Beanie, I don't know whether there was any other bills that you wanted to talk about.
Nope, you've covered it.
So, Shu, if it's all right with you, I want to talk a little bit about what happened with this omnibus bill.
Yes, please do.
So, basically what happened was In our sessions, which begin in January, legislators are allowed to, they propose bills, they're called pre-filed bills, either before the session or at the very beginning of the session. And one of those bills, Senate Bill 1168, and there was a parallel bill introduced in the House, had approximately 20 sections that it was claimed by this organization, TCAA, were simply cleanups, simply fixes to statutes that had been passed in previous years. But when we looked at the bill, it turned out that there were some huge changes in the law that were being proposed.
Ooh, they weren't telling the truth, were they?
Well, that's what I essentially ended up saying when I went to the legislature and I said this has been marketed as a cleanup bill, and there were a small number of things that it did clean up, but there were also some very significant changes.
Like what, David? Can you tell us?
I'm laughing
because, you know, this seems to be their modus operandi. If they're representing associations, you're just going to come in with all kinds of cover-ups.
So the worst change was probably, or several competitors, but the worst was probably a provision that would have allowed all all associations to have foreclosure power, even though all subdivisions, even though there's a statute that says owners can vote to eliminate that. And I will tell you that eventually, as part of the process that I'm about to describe, that bad language was removed, although they kept some expanded powers to seek foreclosure. Probably the candidate for the second worst, but it might have been the first worst provision, would have cracked a big opening into, how do I want to say this? We had worked very hard in previous sessions, and the legislature had passed a bill that required any money paid by an owner first to be paid against any charges that could result in foreclosure. So we call this the priority of payments rule.
Yeah.
And the priority of payments rule says that if I make a payment, first, the payment goes to my current assessment. And second, the payment goes to my any past due assessments. And third, the payment goes to any attorney fees associated with those assessments. And the reason for that order is that all other charges cannot be used to take my home away. And that has had a very powerful protective effect for owners in Texas. And the proposed legislation, which the TCA fought hard to protect, would have allowed the waiver of that right. And once you allow the owner to waive that right, of course, the association will demand that waiver as a condition of settling its various claims. So we fought back against that particular bad provision, and eventually it too was eliminated. The third candidate for worst rule, I hope I'm remembering them all, Beanie, is a change from an abandonment of requirement for certified mail. So as pretty much anyone who's ever lived in the United States will know, for important notices, governments and associations in Texas have been required to use certified mail for many, many years. Decades, really. And the beauty of certified mail is that the postal system keeps track of where the mail goes. So we know if the letter was actually delivered. And that takes that's protective because sometimes letters get lost in the mail. Sometimes the mail processing system chews up a letter, and when it comes, you don't really know what you've got. Sometimes people put the wrong address on a letter, and it goes somewhere other than where they intended to send it. And certified mail, and the Postal Service keeps these records for 2 years, you can track exactly where a letter went. Now, sometimes owners don't pick up their certified mail, but you can tell that too, because the tracking system says attempted delivery day one, attempted delivery day two, attempted delivery day three, owner refused to sign. In place of certified mail, the associations wanted a concept called verified mail. They actually have stuck it in a little bit into this bill, but they wanted it much more broadly. And as originally drafted, verified mail, they just needed some evidence that the letter had been sent. Some evidence, of course, could simply be the property manager writing a note to the file saying, I believe I put this letter in the mail on Friday last week.
And that's it?
That was all that was originally required.
Wow.
So in fighting back against that, we first were able to persuade them that, well, basically what they did was they changed their drafting of verified mail to mean that the Postal Service had to provide the verification. But we still didn't want that mail used for foreclosure, because verified mail, all it means is that they have the Postal Service saying a letter was put in the mail on this day. There's no record of what was actually on the address, and there's no way to know whether it got lost in the mail or otherwise damaged.
And there's no way of knowing whether there was anything, actually anything, in the envelope either.
Yeah, that's true even with certified mail. I will tell you that my experience is that the associations generally do put a letter in the certified envelope. And I wouldn't have any reason to doubt that they're going to put it in the in the verified envelope, because if an owner were to get, at least with a certified envelope, an empty envelope, they'll say, wait a minute, somebody intended to send me something important. Let's see who it was. But in any event, the associations fought to keep verified mail for giving notice of regular violations. And during the process of fighting back, we eventually were able, and I'll talk about that in a little bit, we were eventually able to persuade Representative Bohack, who had sponsored Mary Lou Durham's bill, also to help us preserve the right to certified mail notice. And the beautiful thing was, Representative Bohack was very straightforward. I called him up. I had never spoken with him before. I simply knew he had helped Mary Lou. And he actually called back, which was a pleasure. And he said, so I hear you have some problems. And I said, yes, I have two. And one of them I described was, we want to keep certified mail. And he said, well, I understand certified mail. What's this other thing? And so we went through why we needed certified mail. And he actually was able to win a vote of 142-0.
Wow.
With two people skipping out of the room to get certified mail into the into this legislation.
So they weren't able to change that.
They were not able to change it for the most important of the notices, the ones for foreclosure and the ones for fines and the ones for other discipline. They did change it for the provisions for recount. You have to make political, you know, you have to pick the battles to fight. The statutory provisions for recount are so weak that we decided not to fight extensively on the verification. Recounts are extremely difficult to, at least in Texas, to make work. We did have another issue that concerns secret ballots. But before I get to that, Beanie, were there any other candidates for worst part of the original bill?
No, I think you're doing well. Thank you.
Well, so what we then had to do was, the good thing was that when, all right, so then we had to make a choice about how to oppose this very bad bill. And in several of the previous sessions, we had brought large contingents, large, you know, 15, 20 people sometimes, to Austin to testify. And what we had been told was that some of that testimony was irritating the legislators. And I don't know whether it did or didn't, but that's what we were told.
Who told you that?
Oh, well, some of the legislators told us that, the ones that didn't support us.
The ones that didn't support you, okay.
I have to tell you what the comment was. I don't want to hear any more of those stories. That was the usual. I heard that too many times.
So that's right. And so what we discussed in our advocacy group was we were going to try it their way. And I'm not saying that this is necessarily the right decision. It was the one we decided to try this session. And so I went up and I spoke, but we did not bring 20 people. And after we explained why, and we presented a summary of some of those very bad provisions and why they were bad. To his credit, Senator West, who had previously sponsored some pro-homeowner legislation and who had introduced this bill on behalf of TCAA, Senator West's office told the people from TCAA that they had to negotiate with us to try to resolve our differences of opinion. And after that negotiation was underway, we got some help from Governor Abbott's office. And Governor Abbott's, the Department of, his Department of Policy, had been monitoring the this particular bill, and they supported us on some additional points that needed to be resolved. And what we were able to do with the help of those two supporters was get a bill out of the Senate that improved on maybe 80% of the bad things. We didn't eliminate all the problems, but we got rid of a number of problems, and we also got some good protections concerning elections for owners. And so one of the issues was in voting, there had been concerns about honesty in voting. And so the legislature had previously as a reform move, had required that all ballots be signed. And although that has some advantages, it also raises the possibility of retaliation against people who vote the wrong way.
Right.
And although this issue was not raised by us, it was raised by another group, and we supported the idea of allowing secret ballots. And the only thing we wanted with secret ballots were provisions to make sure that no ballot was counted twice, every ballot was counted, and that in order to make sure that those first two things happened, candidates for office would have the right to have an observer watch the counting of the ballots. And before the bill got out of the House, we reached an agreement with TCAA on how to accomplish the first two of those. That is, no ballots counted twice, and every ballot gets counted once. But the property managers were very much opposed to allowing anybody to watch while they count the ballots. Now, this was troubling to us because, after all, why wouldn't you want to let somebody watch while you're counting the ballots? That's what assures everybody that the ballots are being honestly counted and nobody makes a mistake. And for that very reason, in elections across the country, for all the major governments, any election, you know, where you've got somebody running for House or Senate or a referendum or anything like that, it's routine to allow, often it's the political parties, to designate observers to watch the counting of the ballots. So it's very concerning when the property managers are saying, but we don't think anybody should watch us. When that bill left the Senate and went over to the House to be considered on the House side, we had a number of small issues, but we had two very big issues that concerned us, that we thought we could get some help with. And one of those issues was the verified mail, certified mail dispute, and the other issue was having observers for the counting of the ballots. And we approached the sponsor of the legislation on the House, and that was Representative Villalba, and he said no, he would not accept that as a change. And
wouldn't
so
accept
then,
I'm sorry, can you clarify that? Wouldn't accept
sure.
What as a change?
So the way the legislative process was working was that the Senate bill had been passed by the whole Senate. And so now that bill was going to go over to the House, and the House was going to consider it. And if the House passed the bill, then it would be done and go to the governor for signature. But one of the things that could happen, and in this case did happen, is that the House could amend the bill. And then if the bill was amended, it would go back to the Senate, which could decide whether it was going to accept the amendments or not. And we wanted Representative Villalba to agree to amend the bill in the House to include just these last two changes, to ensure certified mail and to ensure observers at elections. But Representative Villalba was unwilling to do that because TCAA, the sponsor of the bill, didn't want it. So what we did was we looked for some other member of the House of Representatives, in this case Representative Bohack, to introduce the amendment. And he did introduce one amendment to protect certified mail and one amendment to protect the right to observers. And what we really appreciate about Representative Bohack was after he, you know, agreed to sponsor these amendments, he actually went to colleagues in the House, both Republicans and Democrats, and he asked them to be ready to speak when he proposed this amendment. And so when the time came, he proposed the two amendments that we wanted, and then these other elected officials got up and spoke, and I don't know if they were all people he had spoken with, but I do know he had spoken with some. And those representatives explained why they agreed with him that these amendments should be made. And two of the stories struck me as particularly poignant, where the representatives explained that they themselves had been treated badly by associations, and if it could happen to them, it could happen to anyone.
Uh-huh, yep.
So, Beanie, I'm not sure if you want to give your reaction to watching Representative Bohack and how he was able to work on this issue.
Well, I enjoyed the floor fight in this, that when he made his, petition for the amendments, that Representative Villalba wanted to table the motion, and so they had to have a vote on that, and Bohack won on that, and that was great. And then they could proceed, and that then the after that, then the other representatives spoke for, and it was delightful to watch.
It really was. We had several years earlier suffered a very disappointing defeat in the House where Representative Solomons had proposed a bill that we actually thought would solve a lot of problems. And we lost a very close vote. It was, I think we had maybe 70 votes and the other side had maybe 74, 76 votes, something like that. So it was refreshing to see that at least on what should be very straightforward, good government kinds of issues, the House could and did vote 142-0 in favor of adopting these amendments. And I'm assuming that Representative Villalba was one of the two representatives who was not present for that vote. So the bill came back. He might have been present. He might have just decided he had to vote in favor of his own bill, even though it had some provisions that he didn't want. Anyway, the bill came back to the Senate. Senator West accepted those and all the other amendments that had been put on the bill, and we're now waiting for the governor to sign.
So, in all, it's been a successful session. You didn't get everything, but you got a lot of what you wanted.
Well, I would call it more mixed, and Beanie may have a different perspective. We didn't get what we had originally wanted. I guess I had forgotten to mention there had been a proposal to significantly weaken the Open Meetings Act. That was the fourth major contender for worst part of the bill. And this new legislation in some way strengthens the Open Meetings Act because it makes clear what is the process for telephone meetings. If there is a telephone meeting, all the owners get to dial in as well. which for many owners is actually beneficial. They don't have to go to the meeting. They can just dial in. And we got clarification on some issues that must be dealt with in an open meeting, not an executive session. So there were some things that in this omnibus bill that we think strengthen the law for homeowners relating to elections and relating to open meetings. A lot of the rest of it was simply holding the line at what we had already won in the past, but that's important. On the other hand, it was disappointing not to get two other fairly straightforward good government bills through concerning the right to read, I mean, the requirement to read your own deed restrictions as a board member.
It's very disappointing
not to get that. So if you ask me, on balance, our session was hard. We did not get everything we wanted, but we did get something, and we prevented what could have been much worse.
I think sometimes just preventing the other side from gaining ground is a huge step in protecting individual property rights, because they'll just gobble it up like Pac-Man, and they have absolutely no qualms whatsoever about taking it. On the whole, we're sort of running a little low on time, but on the whole, what do you think of how do you assess the fact that you didn't have a whole bunch of people with you? Did it work okay? Is it a better way of doing it?
Well, I don't think it's a better way of doing it, and I was hesitant at the beginning. I was just telling the truth about what we decided. At the main hearing in the House on homeowner association bills, there were other people who testified on other bills. And I feel that it was helpful, very helpful, that they came. My sense is that the only reason we got away with not bringing a lot of people this time, there were two things that happened. First, the associations didn't bring a lot of people either.
Yeah, they usually bust them in, don't they?
They had in past years bust people in, and they may also have been told, we don't need to hear from you all. So it was just there, we saw four lobbyists there. We don't pay any lobbyists. And so in that sense, we were not... It would have been a much starker contrast if they had brought in 200 and we had brought in none. So I think that's one reason we got away with it. And the second reason is, I think at this point in Texas, the legislature is generally aware that there is a conflict over, as you say, basic property rights. And we saw that in the hearing where Representative Bohack was proposing his amendments, and he said, you know, we've heard these issues every year for the past 10 years. He had been on the relevant committee, the Business and Industry Committee in the House, so he knew what he was talking about. He wasn't on the committee this year, but he said, you know, I've been on that committee for 10 years or more, and we know that there are concerns that homeowners have. And then he said, and these two concerns are legitimate. And other members of the House also referenced how there had been many years where these issues had come up and they expected issues to keep coming up. So I think that to some extent we had educated people in the past. But I think that if we were going to have more affirmative legislation, I would still be wanting to have as many homeowners as possible come and explain how the problem has affected them and their families.
David Beeney.
May I add, we need them there, but I think even more, we need homeowners in every district just bombarding their senators and reps with the actual problem so that each one in his district is aware and then votes right. Okay?
I agree with you. Thank you so very much, Beanie, David. You're both amazing. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Well, thank you, Shu, and I think that, you know, as
please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings closed to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.